Mary Meat, and welcome to episode 16 of Pennies in the Well. I am your host, Saturn, and today is Friday, September something or other. September 17th, actually. And boy, got a lot of stuff on the go today. There's just been so much that's been happening. And this is take two of this episode, and I have been sick, so if I get a little extra rambly or I fail to wrap up something in a nicely coherent way, I am very sorry. It's just, I probably won't even notice, so it's a little hard to fix. Anyway, that disclaimer aside, let's get into all the various and assorted things. Which, of course, being me, I'd like to start with actually an aside and a ramble and just a moment I was just having. I was listening to the intro song, which I'm sure you're probably getting tired of, but these days when I'm recording, I'm doing it so fast that I'm grabbing the music and shoving it in and skipping to the end and then starting to record, and I usually don't stop and actually get to listen to it. So today I did, and I had a flashback to when I was first thinking of doing the podcast and getting things set up and contacting complete strangers so I could use their music, thank you Meredith Luce, and their picture, thank you Perry Erica, and just how different almost it is and how not different it is now that I'm 16 episodes in, or a few extra depending on how you want to count things. I don't even know how to describe it, but I will segue slightly here for you. When I first got started, I very much focused on, I'm just talking to myself, talking to my cats, talking to the microphone. I'm not really thinking about who may or may not ever actually listen to the episode so that I wouldn't get too freaked out, too stage frighted, anything like that. And I would be happily able to record, which, yes, I do get stage fright, believe it or not. Oh my God, I actually pretty much avoid going on stage except for dancing, and even that's quite harrowing, but on the flip side, very cool, and I do miss it, but that comes back around in a little bit. So recently I had an experience with a man named Onyx, a listener named Onyx, I should say, or, well, both those statements are actually true. He is both a man and he's a listener, and he really brought home to me the people, the wonderful people that are you that are listening to the show. After episode 14, and I had my big P commentary on how you have an impact on the podcasters. It's not just podcasters out to you guys. He went and got all of his friends on Facebook to vote for me on Podcast Alley. So if you've been to Podcast Alley and seen me at like number one and now I'm at number two, goes, go Velma! Yes. An extra aside, just a fabulous aside, that several of the pagan podcasts actually beat out the 1 year audio Bible last month. So that's pretty cool. Way to go to you guys for voting. And to the podcasters for making it. But coming back to Onyx, he decided from what I'd said there and as kind of a thank you to me and the show to get people to vote for me and put me at number one. And it was the most heart-opening experience I'd had in a while. Eye-opening too, but we'll go more with heart-opening. In part, it really brought home the reality of you, the listeners, because it's kind of hard to pretend I'm just talking to myself, even though the reality is I really am just talking to myself as I'm sitting here looking outside at a relatively sunny day and going, there's no one here but me and some crazy psycho kitties, and that doesn't really count. And now I'm talking to myself and feeling like a mildly crazy person, but that's beside the point. So he really brought home the fact that almost the reality of you the listener, in the best, most wonderful way possible. And I don't know, I don't even have words for it. Just a really big thank you, Onyx. You had a huge impact on my day and my weekend and my month with that one, making me really feel connected to you and to the listeners and feeling loved and really opening up to trusting what it is that I'm doing on the podcast. Yeah, just amazing. So a big thank you out to Onyx, to everyone else who has voted, to everyone who listens and doesn't vote, because honestly, it's really cool to be number one, don't get me wrong, but if I am, if I'm not, it doesn't overly matter to me. I think the kind of the coolest thing from it is that more people started downloading the show because I was number one, and that means more people listening, and that's kind of cool. So if you're new and listening after that little experience, welcome aboard to the insanity train. Yeah, sanity is not a really big thing here on Pennies, because what most people consider sanity, I consider a locking in of not necessarily useful principles and forcing us to behave in ways that are not necessarily congruent with our deep inner souls, which is what we're after. And so sometimes that has to elicit a little insanity from a cultural point of view, but really healthy from an internal working point of view. Wow, I hope that made sense. So I got some thank yous to start off with and some informational notes, and then getting into things that I have learned. Then the main part of this show, of course, will be talking about how you experience the divine, which to all the people who sent in their commentary, and to get into the draw as well. Fabulous. Thank you so much. It's so cool. I think you'll really enjoy listening to what it is that your fellow pagans have to say about experiencing the divine. And then at the end of the show, I'm going to do a little pagan housekeeping. So, big show, a lot of stuff going on. Let's get into some of those announcement-y stuff. First off, I do want to thank Holly formally. I don't know that I remembered to do that in our wacky, crazy must-get-a-show-out of episode 15, because we really were on the fly. There's a lot of stuff going on. And Holly, thank you so much. And she's gotten a bit of her own fan mail, and she will be back on the show. Don't worry, she's not chopped liver. She's coming back. We had way too much fun. So I hope you enjoyed that episode, and thank you to Holly. I also wanted to remind everyone, the writers in the listening group, that Misanthrope Press, and that's their website address, misanthropepress.com, is doing their pagan anthology, and they're accepting submissions up until the end of October, so get that in. The contest, of course, we'll be drawing for later, so that's the contest to win the Tricky Pixie CD. And got the thanks to Holly. Got that. All right, I guess it is time to talk about the things that I have learned. And I really think that this needs an intro, something goddess-like, I'm thinking, which I haven't actually had time to make up, but let's see if we can throw something in for fun just to see. Hold on. Dear priestess, did you have a good day in living today? Did you learn anything interesting? Do tell. Yeah, I think I'm going to have to try something different for that particular intro. But, you know, we'll get there. On the list of things that I have been learning lately, it has been one hell of a crazy month. So bear with me just a little bit. First is, strangely enough, I ended up at the Lady Gaga concert, which if you don't know who Lady Gaga is, I empathize because I didn't know who she was. Until my sister decided to go to her concert and had an extra ticket because her husband wouldn't go with her, and I ended up at it. She's a big, I would say, pop music star at the moment. Very out there, kind of more, very avant-garde, Madonna-esque, diva-like. Yeah, that's what I'll go with it. So we go to the concert, and this is where it gets interesting from a magical perspective. Like I said, I didn't actually know who she was. I listened to like two songs on YouTube before I went. If you're a Lady Gaga fan, I am sorry, but that's just the way it worked out. And don't worry, the Lady Gaga fans in my office already freaked on me for having the nerve to get a free ticket to go when I didn't know her at all. So I've already been berated for that. However, I am a convert. I will say that. I enjoyed her music, but that's not a surprise. I do enjoy pop music. But I also really adored her messaging to the audience and to people, which is essentially that everyone is perfect just as they are. We're all little monsters, and isn't that fabulous? So that thematically was really great, and I really loved her attitude and her approach to people, to her audience, to the people who make her who she is. It was great. But the really cool part, magically speaking, was how she manipulated the energy of the room over the course of the evening. It was done kind of as a story of going to what she called the Monster Ball. So the entire concert was about taking this trip of getting from, you could extrapolate and say, from everyday normal living to shedding all of your self-hatrednesses and inhibitions and all the things that you keep walled inside so that they hold you back, releasing all of that, becoming who you are, and thus making it to the Monster Ball at the end. I might be extrapolating a bit, but I'm going to go with that. The energy in the room, holy crap, 20,000 people packed into this arena and just completely gone for this performer. I mean, they were just beside themselves at the mere mention of her name by the opening act. Oh my God, it was stunning. And of course, by the time she got on, the room was filled and everyone was just, I'm sure I already said beside themselves, but they were beside themselves, and thus there were two of everybody and they were all ecstatic and just overflowing with energy. And it was all directed to this one person who was taking that energy, redirecting it out at the crowd in an effort to help, in a weird, slow and sideways way, elevate the people in the room to a different awareness and spiritual level. Really, it wasn't like doing ritual in the classic sense, because of course it's a rock concert and people aren't there to be elevated. But in essence, I do believe that's what she was doing, conscious or no, of the actual magical technique behind it. And absolutely fascinating. Can you imagine what you could do with 20,000 people all completely ecstatically, energetically present and throwing their energy at you, and you being able to redirect it to such a wonderful purpose? It was really stunning on a magical level. Really good performance on a practical level too. I admit, I'm a convert. I enjoyed it that much. If you ever get the opportunity, I would say it was really fascinating, and it's also really interesting to take moments like that and look at them from a pagan and magical perspective, because it's everywhere. It's just a matter of seeing it, which strangely ties into the experience of the divine thing, but we'll get back to that in a little bit. So that was one of the things that was going on. Another thing was, I'm sure I've mentioned that I've been having knee problems, and I finally, I will back this up ever so slightly, the Abysmal Witch episode that I did, and yes, there will be more. I just really want a better portable mic before I try and do another one. Anyhow, what I did was for healing on my knee, because, well, my knee was, well, how to put it, shot. We don't know exactly what happened to it, but something bad. I don't have great knees to begin with, but something bad happened to my left knee back in March and really incapacitated me. Walking for more than like half an hour just led to ongoing pain. Dancing was definitively out, which was highly depressing. Things like that. Even biking didn't work, which is supposed to be, you know, pretty good even for knees. Well, after the Abysmal Witch episode, after that spell casting, and after I was burning the candle and working on it, went back to my doctor, finally got a referral to SportMed BC. They're located at the University of British Columbia, and, well, they focus on sport medicine. And I have to say, it was the most fabulous experience I've ever had with doctors. I have a huge fear of doctors, going back to when I was a kid. And this one, he great bedside manner, older gentleman, really knew what he was talking about. And having been to the emergency room about my knee, my regular doctor, physiotherapist, these people, it was a whole new level of knee stuff. They know their thing, their stuff. It was shocking in a kind of way, because it wasn't just like one little test or two little tests for how the knee moved. It was deep, long conversation with the intern of trying to ferret out all the teeny tiny little details about what it felt like, what had happened, etc. And then the testing on the knee itself went on at length. And then the doctor came in and we went through it again, and the testing on at length, multiple tests. I have loose patellas. Not really sure what that says about me. I have loose patellas. But it was a grand experience. He gave me some very targeted exercises and a very specific referral for a knee brace, like not just a go get a knee brace, but you are going to go get this very particular brand name coded, etc. knee brace. And between those two things, oh my God, I was able to do stuff around the house. Well, I had this, we'll get to that in a second. Went to the local PNE Pacific National Exhibition, big fair. A lot of animals, a lot of showcasing of house kind of cool stuff, fair rides, stuff like that. So just, yeah, big fair type of event and went to it, and we were there all day, and my knee was okay. And there was a couple other things that went on where I was able to just wander around all day. I was walking all day. I've even danced for, okay, I admit it, like 10, 15 minutes, but I've danced and it was okay. This was huge. I mean, it was like being given back a part of my life that I love that has been ripped from me for like the last 7 months or 6 months or whatever it's been. It's not fully back, but what a difference it has made. So part of this is, of course, the follow-up from the Spell on the Abysmal Witch episode, and that spells work in curious ways. I hadn't even put the two together, quite honestly, until very recently as I was working on this podcast. So there's that connection, and then realizing how important being able to move and the physicalness has been to my mental health, and just being able to move again, I was able to finally look at how freaked out I was about being constrained in such a way. On the downside, because, you know, there's always a downside, it also brought back all of my time issues. There is not enough time in the world, and that's a topic for another day, but holy crap, I miss time. Anyway, so the knee thing has been absolutely fabulous. That has made my life this last month manageable in very funky ways, because I've mentioned it before on the podcast that due to an unhappy person somewhere who complained to the city, the storage room that I have that's off the loft, which was created by the previous owners, had to be reconverted back to an attic, which, you know, c'est la vie. I bought the place. I didn't make sure people had permits for doing the stuff that they did, so I get to live with the consequences. Wasn't fun. Trying to take, I think it was like a 15-foot square room with a slope ceiling. You can fit a lot of crap into a room like that. So I had to get all the stuff out and work with the fiberglass and, you know, yay friends. Let me just say, yay friends. The interesting parts about it, I mean, one part was just being able to move. So that's where the knee came in. I had so much lifting and carrying up and down the damn stairs because the, well, storage room is upstairs, and had boxes and boxes and boxes of stuff. And I've been to the dump twice and to Value Village once, and my friends have taken a bunch of stuff. And yeah, I purged like nobody's business. So I give you one guess what the magical housekeeping topic at the end of the episode will be. But the interesting part on a magical level was that I discovered that in some weird, twisty way, my subconscious and some of my old trauma were being, it was almost like they were buried in that attic behind everything else. So Holly will attest to this. I went absolutely just freaky about getting this done, completely obsessed. There was nothing but getting this work done and getting it finished and being able to put all this behind me. It was just kind of freaky. That was probably a direct quote from Holly, actually. And I'll agree. I mean, I was beyond obsessed. I mean, it was literally all I could think about pretty much every day, and there was nothing else that I wanted to work on. Which, obviously, when you're that intense about something, there's usually a cause hiding in behind it. Well, when I was younger, I've mentioned, you know, some nasty stuff, and I would talk about it, except that there are other people involved, and because of that, I'm constrained in what I can say. But nasty stuff happened, and in a weird way, involved closets. I spent some time actually hiding in a closet when I was young. And that attic space that I now have, or the storage room that I used to have, represented that in some weird level. So having everything removed was like I didn't have the memories, or not even the memories, but the feelings attached to them were no longer barricaded ever so nicely and safely behind a bunch of stuff. They were no longer buried. It was like I had excavated it out into the open at a time that really wasn't of my choosing. And there it just sat glaring at me, and my emotions were running more than amok. Well, I'm still working on all that stuff because the room is now no longer a room. It's an attic, so I can't just go stand in it and have the experience of it, and it no longer has that closet feeling. It now has an attic feeling, which is very different. But it was fascinating to see how I was reacting so strongly to simply clearing out a physical room. You never know what things that go on in your life are going to trigger you into reactions that are caused from something completely different. The trick is that when they happen, of actually giving yourself time and space to feel them, to sit with them, to really get to know what the hell's going on, so that it isn't just something that happens and maybe repeats periodically through your life, but it's something that happens that you work with, because, hello, we're pagans and we're witches, and we actually work actively on our lives. And this type of thing is the perfect opportunity to do so. I mean, how often do we actually get a window opening into our own deeper psyche where we can consciously, actively connect with it? Most times we connect, or those doorways or what have you are open when we sleep. Well, I wasn't asleep. I was very, very much awake. And once I could wrap my attention towards the angst, so to speak, I could work with it. That actually is probably the tricky part, is getting yourself to focus on it when you're so emotionally worked up. It's as if the natural tendency, and it probably is, it's probably a survival mechanism, that our attention goes very much away from the inner things that are disturbing the shit out of us. So that was a very interesting time, and still not completely resolved, but pretty cool to work on nonetheless, and I'm really glad to have had that opportunity. So if you ever have one of those moments where you get really freakishly obsessed over something, like freakishly obsessed, take a deep breath, sit down, relax, maybe light a candle or two, and have a really good conversation with yourself about what's going on, while you remember to sit and feel and kind of give yourself a hug. In other words, don't just sit there and feel and go, oh God, this feels horrible, but feel it and recognize that it's just a part of you, and give it attention and care, and give yourself attention and care, and give yourself a hug. Aw, now I want to give everybody who's listening a hug. Well, I kind of am. So here I am. I'm going to hug. Yep, hugging the microphone. Hugs out to everybody, because you know what? We all need a hug every now and again. And if you're not into the physical touchness, well, you know what? I can't actually physical touch you, so yeah, you're pretty much safe. But Zen hugs. Zen hugs to everybody. All right, we're going to take a break. I'm going to listen to some kind of music. Actually, I think we're going to hear... it's an S.J. Tucker song in honor of the Tricky Pixie CD I'll be giving away in a little bit. However, it's not off the Tricky Pixie CD. It's a song off of one of her other albums, but it's called Pixie Can't Sleep. And I thought that the title seemed rather apropos. So I figured, what the hell? We're going to play that, listen to it today. She is on the featured music list because she has given permission. So thank you, S.J. Tucker, for letting us listen to one yet another of your wonderful songs. Enjoy the music, and I'll see you after the break.
The dreams are coming wild and still. The dreams are coming in. The thief of love collects a kill. The night can now begin.
Walls start closing.
The pixie can't sleep.
The pixie can't sleep.
The pixie can't sleep.
The pixie can't sleep.
She loved you better, but could you let her?
She's banished back to the dreaming, just forget her.
Out with the hungry,
out with the hungry,
in with the burn,
in with the burn.
The lesson is learned, you both play the victim.
I know you know the pixie can't sleep.
It's overrated.
Since she heard you can't sleep,
she's devastated.
Rest is overrated.
Love is a dream without a world.
Its language is empty as a coma, floating free of all concern.
The lesson learned,
the lesson learned.
Let go and go.
Gotta let go.
There's more room to breathe when you're alone.
Yeah.
The pixie can't sleep.
The pixie can't sleep.
The pixie can't sleep.
The pixie can't sleep.
The pixie can't
The pixie can't sleep.
Just a little too late, the dragon dreams, the goddess rises and she screams, girl, what are you doing? Your love is a dream without a setting, and you're forgetting the lesson learned.
Dreams are coming wild and still, the dreams are coming in. The thief of love collects a kill, the night can now begin. Walls start closing in, the dreams are singing wild and shrill. She vanishes in the din. Thief of lock and drink her fill, but the sleeper's growing thin. I am stretched too thin. I can't sleep,
I can't sleep. And welcome back to episode 16 of Pennies in the Well. Thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, thank you for taking the time to spend with me and with yourself. So let's talk about how we experience the divine. I got some great commentary from people and I'm really looking forward to sharing it with you. But first, strangely enough, we're going to slip in a little big piece section here. It'll all make sense in a second, I promise.
Open your mind,
your spirit,
your heart.
Soul.
Open your soul,
your heart,
spirit.
Your mind.
Open to the world around you and change your perspective.
And now it's time for the Big P.
All right. The reason why we're having a little big P section before we actually get into how we experience the divine is because one of the people who emailed me, Crux, and I'm sorry, I don't know if you're a male or female, and it's really hard to tell, okay? I just have to say that it's really hard to tell from names and being online whether someone is male or female. So I'm really sorry if I ever get anyone wrong. I really don't mean to. And I'm sure people will get mine wrong at some point too, because Saturn isn't exactly a clear indicator of male or female. In fact, might make people think of male because Saturn was a male god. So, you know, unless you're actually hearing me talk, which thankfully doing a podcast you can, you can't really tell that I'm female unless you see a picture or listen to me. So the same kind of goes for everybody else. So if I ever get your gender wrong, I am very sorry. Enough said about that. Getting into what Crux had to say and the reason that I want to include it in the big P, and let me first read what it was that she said. She was answering the question about the divine, or he, and she said, "What makes answering your question daunting, as I mentioned, is just that I'm new to this path. Just finding the path, really, at long last. And though I have certainly experienced what I would call the divine in the situations I described, I feel a little underqualified to be answering the question at all. Like maybe what I have just described isn't really what you're getting at, and there might be some hidden something I'm just not getting. Perhaps I'm not really pagan enough to answer the question as posed." Okay. First off, I'll refer you over to Project Pagan Enough over at incitingariot.com for just the concept of whether or not people are pagan enough. And quite honestly, I think there is a minimum requirement towards being pagan, but pagan itself is such a broad umbrella term that, you know, as long as you self-identify that and you have one or two characteristics in your practice or lack of practice but belief system that qualifies pagan, I really don't think that there is such a thing as being more or less pagan. There are people that exhibit more or less of a quality within paganism and within certain traditions. There's certainly, you know, knowing more, experiencing more. You know, I wonder if you can be witchier than thou. Can't be paganer than thou. Even witchier than thou. It really depends how it's approached, in my opinion. But There is no such thing as pig enough. You either are or you aren't. And if you feel that you are and it sounds like what you believe is not radically different, then yes, you are. The reason I say radically different is because, honestly, from my point of view, if someone is, say, Jewish and considers themselves pagan, but everything that they do is of the Jewish faith, then you're, no matter how many times you call it pagan, it's still going to be Jewish. So that's about my only limitation on that one. So I would say check out The Inciting a Riot, Pagan Enough, because you are pagan enough. But getting to the other part, people new on the path often feel that way about whether or not is it the right answer. In fact, you know, for some people it doesn't go away for a really long time, potentially ever, which, you know, keeping constant question over whether or not what you're experiencing is realistic is a good thing. But feeling qualified to answer the question, there are mysteries, at least within certain paths within paganism. Like Wicca is a mystery tradition, which doesn't mean that it's hiding things from you deliberately and you can't get to them until you become a 10th level, you know, master of the high poobahness. It's that there are mysteries inherent within the world, the universe, whatever you want to call it, that you can't understand until you experience them. That's what's meant by mystery. They are something that has to be experienced individually. And while you can prepare yourself to have a mystery, and other people can help prepare you and kind of guide you into having kind of the pre-experiences that can lead up to making it easier to have the full experience, it's still a mystery, and it will either happen or not. And until you've had the experience, you're never really going to understand what someone's talking about when they talk about this. And once you've had it, you will understand why it is that people who haven't had the experience don't understand. And you will be now on the other side of the fence going, I'm trying to explain it, but I can't because you haven't had the experience. However, your individual experience of the divine has nothing to do with the mystery. And so in that sense, there was, you were absolutely and completely, crux, getting the question correct, and your answer was completely and utterly perfect because it is your answer. And experiencing the divine is intensely personal and individual, and therefore absolutely and completely correct for you, for where you are. Yay you! So I really wanted to get at that for a perspective thing, that depending on where you are on the path, you can either feel that you don't know enough, that you aren't qualified enough to answer something like this. But when it's your own experiences, you are the only person qualified to answer it. And when you get farther along the path, you may not be as uncertain about something like that, but you may still have that questioning moment of, is this really what they're looking for? Personally, I have a hard time getting put on the spot sometimes with questions. Not always, but sometimes. If you ask me for what feels like a right-wrong answer to a question, I'm like, oh my god, I feel like I'm going to get it wrong. Well, unless I'm super highly confident. But a lot of the time, I do feel that way. Even though it's not a realistic thing to do. I think it's a holdover from the tortures of elementary and high school, personally. So, you are... I think I covered everything that I wanted to on Crux's comment on there. So you are not missing anything. There was nothing hidden in the question. You're absolutely pagan enough. And yeah, thank you. Thank you for giving me permission to read that and to explore a little bit of what that meant. So now let's get into how you actually experience the divine. I'm going to start with Crux because that's the email that's sitting right on the top of my pile. So he or she said, I experience the divine in pleasant sensations from the earth, when I am outside, quiet and alone, and away from the urbanness, like when I walk my dogs in the bushland reserve by my house near sunrise or sunset. There's generally no one else around, and it's just me and the trees and the kangaroos lolling under distant trees, and a kookaburra cackling in the distance. When hiking in the mountains, and all that's before me is beautiful forest or a magnificent alpine view, and the air is clean and cold to breathe. When swimming and feeling the cool water flow over my face and my body, or lying in the grass and feeling the sun on my face. Oh, just sounds marvelous, and really kind of makes me want to go to Australia. I love your description. I find it interesting. There's two things I want to pull out of what you said. One was especially at sunrise and sunset, which are classic liminal boundaries, liminal being kind of threshold areas. Sunrise, sunset, so twilight, doorways, even the shoreline, for instance, places where you cross from one thing to another are boundary points. And because of that, they're very nature allows things to kind of slip through a little easier, which is why Samhain and Beltane are also liminal boundaries, interestingly enough. Actually, all of the festivals are in their own way, which is why they can be so good for doing magic and for contacting, especially at Samhain, the ancestors, because the veil is already thinner. Sunrise and sunset, that veil is also a little thinner, which would make it a little easier, I think, to feel that connection. And the other point I'm going to draw out is that what you describe is feeling divinity when you're out in nature. And you are about to discover how very much not alone you are and how very, well, similar many of the viewpoints are that I received. So next I'm going to read from Isis Gemini. Really, I have no idea. I'm going to go because Isis was very distinctly female with her, but as I said, my own name throws that particular gender association off. So she, we hope, says, "It is pretty easy for me to experience the divine every day. I live way out in the country, away from civilization. Experiencing the divine comes from many things here. I witness the most beautiful sunrises and sunsets." Ha ha, how's that for fun? Almost word for word, isn't it? "Not to mention amazingly clear and awesome starry nights. I experience the divine every time I witness butterflies flitting around, or even from the simple pleasure I receive from watching lizards and other creeping things dance the dance of life. I do not have to be in ritual space to experience the god and goddess's presences. It just happens, and I consider myself so blessed to be able to live in such a beautiful part of my state." So, again, the mention of sunrises and sunsets, starry nights. I have a feeling that I know personally that within darkness, it's almost easier to connect with things that are well, not solid. It's as if the daylight pulls us into being very grounded and very literal, and that darkness actually opens up because things aren't as obviously tangible, and it has a lot to do with sight and stuff, and I'm digressing horribly, but I do think starry nights would be another time that is very, it becomes easier to connect with divinity. And again, very much she was talking about just experiencing the divine within nature. Okay, so Ginger says, "Sometimes it's in ritual, when the energy is coursing through my body and images flow before my eyes. Sometimes it's in the weather, the sun's heat on my face, the crash of thunder in a storm or cruel rain beating on the roof. Sometimes it's in the deep stare of my cat or the flutter of a butterfly's wing. The goddess is always there, gently reminding me of my connections to her and the universe. I just have to look up and recognize that I'm surrounded by her grace." You guys write so beautifully. I feel like I should just get things like this on a regular basis and read them out for everyone to experience. More butterflies' wings. It's really interesting to me the number of, considering how relatively short these statements are, the crossover statements, because this is not the first butterfly's wing that has led to the goddess, which is intriguing, especially since she's all of butterflies are about change and transformation. Anyhow, so I like, you know what? There is no judgment for me on your experience. I love what everyone has written. I find it all fascinating, and there is no right or wrong. You're all right, if you want to think of it that way, and it's all fabulous. I'm just, again, trying to pull out certain things to talk about. So here we had, she does mention, and I'm going to assume Ginger's a woman. This is my theme for the night, apparently, uncertainty of gender. Relatively certain of my own. Just grab my own boob. Yes, I'm a girl. Okay, so she does mention ritual, but it's interesting because when ritual does get mentioned by people, it has that, well, you know, there's almost this, of course, when in ritual you can connect with divinity, but really most of my experiences happen when I'm outside of ritual. At least that's how it's coming across to me, and actually something I would agree with. So she mentions ritual. This is the first mention I think we have of ritual in the list. But again, of nature and looking up and recognizing, which is another theme that we'll come back to. So Holly says that she loves being with deity when her heart is open and I can truly listen to the spaces in between. Then I can hear the inner voice of wisdom, feel the nudge to do the right thing, and find the spark to move me into action. So here Holly's taken a different bent and is describing how she experiences it within her own interior scape, her inner scape, as it were. So the descriptions so far have been primarily about outer worldscapes, experiencing divinity, seeing them within the natural world around us. And Holly is talking about how they directly connect with her internally. And I'm not, again, there's no right or wrong. I think actually that probably most people experience in all of these different ways. It's just a matter of what came to mind when I asked the question. And also the primary ways in which you notice and feel your connection within divinity, which varies, I would assume, greatly from people to people. So I like that, hearing the inner voice of wisdom. That's just a lovely thing. Feeling the nudge to do the right thing. Well, often in my world, it's what we like to call a clue by four. Well, yeah, well, you know, when you ignore the nudges for too long, gods get a little impatient with you because you really need to get moving on something. And so they give you a clue by four up the back of the head because you keep going, I really want to understand what you want. And they go, but I've been telling you. And you go, but I really want to understand. No, seriously, I've been telling you, they say. But I won't get it. I want to understand. And then they hit you, whack you over the back of the head with a glue by four. And you go, oh. And when you've recovered from the pain, that's when you have the, okay, now I get what they've been trying to tell me. And now that my eyes have been opened, it's really, really fucking obvious. And I really should have got that a long time ago. So I understand why they use a glue by four, but ow, that hurt. Okay. So that, I like her different take on it. Thank you, Holly. I'm just going to have to switch screens for a second. Egan, in his email, I like this. It ties in a couple different ways. So he decided to look at the question through practical eyes on a daily basis. I experience the divine every time I look into the faces of my children, with every smile, laugh, cry, and new discovery they make. I experience deity every time I get lost in a good song. I am carried away to another place, sometimes a place in the past, sometimes a place in the future, always somehow a learning experience when this happens. I experience deity every time I go to a Brazilian jiu-jitsu or any other martial arts class. Something about the lessons learned there can only be imparted by the gods. I experience deity when I spend time in nature. It could be a walk through the neighborhood with my 15-month-old son. It could be a bike ride with my girls. They have just really learned to ride. I am so proud. It could be fishing or just being on vacation at the beach. I experience deity when I am with my wife. We have very different schedules. When we are intimate, when we have time to go on a date, even when we argue, it is a blessing and lesson learned. I wish she could understand fully how much she aids in my self-discovery. Oh, no, that is just so sweet. Even though I experience some of these things on a daily basis, the challenge for me is to always remember where these blessings come from, especially those involving my wife. She is not pagan and does not agree fully with my choice, sometimes not at all, but the gifts she brings to my life are priceless, whether or not she knows or can understand them fully. So this is how I experience deity on a daily basis. I may not always have time to meditate or cast a circle and spend time in sacred space. I do, however, have the time to recognize, though not always when it is happening, the many blessings the gods bring into my life. And I am going to read this last little bit. Thank you for posing this question. It gave me a chance to reinforce how the gods play an important and inseparable part of my daily life. Which, if more of you got that out of this little question, then wow, I served a greater purpose than I was expecting. And I kind of like it when the world goes that way or the gods act that way. I do believe that many times things that I choose to do or things that I say aren't necessarily purely for me. And when that does happen and I can bring inspiration to other people, I feel that I have served very, very well, and it makes me, well, happy. So again, he got very much into, as he said, the daily experience, which is really, I'm going to sum it up as looking, noticing, paying attention, seeing that they're there and that they are there all the time, but it's a matter of paying attention. So that brings me on to Wolf's description. Basically, I see the universe itself as divine. God is immanent within myself and all things. A lot of pagans say within all living things, but I think that's absurd. Does a bacterium embody the essence of the divine when a mountain does not? Because technically for some people a mountain isn't living, so they would have that viewpoint. And I have to agree with Wolf on that one. And seeing all space and time as a manifestation of the deity, it stands to reason that I experience the divine everywhere all the time. But of course it isn't that easy, is it? Actually trying to put any of that into words doesn't make it clear, either to me or certainly not to anyone else. I guess I experience the divine all the time, but only occasionally am I conscious of it. That, I think, it cuts straight to a necessary point. There's a typical, I'm not going to say completely pagan viewpoint, because it's not like we own it, and it's not like everyone who's pagan has it, but that there's divinity within everyone and everything. I don't do all living things, I do everything. So much simpler that way. And it doesn't leave out the mountains. But that deity and divinity does lie within everything, and it's a matter of recognizing it. So being, as he says, only occasionally am I conscious of it, I think is a very fair statement for many of us, where, especially when you're meandering through life and you're doing the stuff that you have to do and you're getting laundry done and you're cooking dinner and kids got to get ready for school and you've got to get ready for work and there's this to get done and that to get done. And it becomes just a flood of details that we rush through as fast as possible. And we forget to look. And if you stop, really, I don't think there's any moment I've had where if I stopped, I couldn't see divinity lying within a moment. It's not always the easiest to see, and especially in the midst of tragedy, it's very hard. But it's always there. It's just a matter, as he says, of being conscious of it. So I really like your description. He said, what a mess. And I have to disagree. That wasn't a mess at all. It was a lovely description. So thank you. Okay. And let's see. Polly says, anywho, to answer the question at the top, just how do I celebrate the divine? In a word, subtly, and in a paragraph, I celebrate the divinity of the universe, the divine, the everything, and the nothing by dancing, singing in the shower, making dinner for my chosen family, teaching others about witchcraft and magic. When I am walking down the hill I live on to work early in the morning and the moon is not yet gone to bed, by crafting potions and lotions that not only make me feel divine while making them, but help others feel similar. Of course, this would not be a good explanation unless I shared how I see the divine, which is interesting because I don't think anyone else quite took that road. So curious. I like it. My perceptions of deity. Let's see. I come from the school that people created gods and not the other way around. Now, if you add the basic premise that you are the universe and the universe is you and that energy is magic, it all becomes very clear. Well, clear to me. Belief is also energy. Thus, when many believe in the same thing, then it is possible that the energies of that belief will manifest. Makes sense? Works in my head. Anyhow, from this it is possible to, on the one side, understand that people created divine and they are essentially not real, but that this energy and magic of belief has made them real, so it is possible, on the other hand, to work with individual deities. Works better with hand-waving, you know. Oh, and a cup of tea. Which I have to agree. A lot of explanations do work better when you can wave your hands and you do have a cup of tea in your hand. It's funny how that goes. The second part of her comment, which I'm very happy to share, but it's also not something I'm going to get into. That's a different type of topic, whether or not we create the deities or not. But the experiences that she described, again, are very similar. It's in, have you noticed that a lot of the descriptions are either in nature or in aspects of our life that bring us joy? So dealing with family, dealing with children, things at home. And though it's interesting because Egan's wasn't necessarily of joy, but of the, I would say, at a guess, since I didn't write it and it's not me, that his experience was when they're not so happily pleasant, but they're still connected. They are moments that are really lived, when you're really engaged, that the divine is experienced. That's my extrapolation on that one. Okay, let's move on. Araya comments, I encounter my gods in dreams, in trance visions, and sometimes just as a voice in my ear. Other times I feel that I am guided, nudged in the right direction. Sometimes I can tell when this is happening, and other times I only see it in retrospect, when I realize things have fallen into place in an unusual way. Some of the deities with whom I have developed relationships feel more distant than others and less likely to respond to casual attempts at contact, while others feel like they are always right there and I can just sort of chat with them. Of course, there's always the question of how do I know that a particular piece of intuition or voice in my head, because it's not like I physically hear anything, just to be clear, is divine versus my own unconscious mind or wishful thinking for that matter. And to be honest, I don't know for certain, and there's always alternate explanations, but there's just a difference to it sometimes, and those differences are fairly consistent, and when I take it as a divine voice, or the voice of some other spirit contact, that connection seems to deepen, and I begin to hear it more clearly. There's a balance to be struck, I think, between taking every thought or passing fancy as a divine message, and dismissing real contacts as figments of our imaginations. Which, always a good point to bring up and be cognizant of when you're hearing things in your head, whether literal voices, because I've actually heard literal voices, and that is creepy, let me tell you. I don't mean that they're telling me to go kill something, but I have what you could call a clairaudience. So every now and again, and it's pretty rare, I actually hear words and sounds that weren't actually there from anyone else's perspective. Creepy! But for me, I would agree that when hearing deity, it's not like I'm hearing physical sound. It's a different type of internal hearing that's very hard to describe for me at the moment. But it is very important to always keep kind of a sanity check going in your head. You know, if your deity ever starts telling you to go out rampaging and killing people, you might be having a problem and you might be having some brain chemistry issues because not everything is metaphysical. Some things just are physical and need to be dealt with on a physical level. There is, though, this great movie. Oh, I wish I'd looked it up. I think it has Matthew McConaughey in it, and he's it's about the Hand of God killer, where this guy basically is inspired by what he believes is God to go out and kill people that that are doing bad things, right? So it's a list given to him by God. Now, he has two sons, one of whom believes his dad, one of whom does not. Ah, ha! The wonders of Google, I tell you. It's called Frailty, and it is a fascinating, fascinating movie. I guess it falls into the world of horror, technically, but one that I've watched repeatedly just because of the intriguingness of how they've put things. But to come back to what Araya was saying, it is always very important to kind of keep that internal sanity check. You know, we want... The goal, from my point of view, is to be the best functioning, achieving person that I can be for whatever it is that I want to function and achieve in. And if I ever go so completely over into the metaphysical side that I lose my touch, my grasp, my ability to work within normal reality, then in my personal opinion, I have failed. Because it's not just about being able to go out and have amazing, wonderful experiences that are beyond normal human scope. It's about being able to come back after those experiences and to share, which is a very kind of emerald tablet view of the world in an interesting way. But I seriously would digress if we went down that road. So, but from her other description, more like Holly's description, it's about how she herself is experiencing deity directly within her own inner landscape. And I like also that she mentions how she connects kind of outwards with, that it isn't just always experiencing the divine where they're reaching to us or giving us messages or simply present and we notice, but there are also ways of us reaching out and connecting with divinity by our own action and by our own choice. And this kind of comes up, I think, potentially a little more often in ritual, because in ritual we are making the concerted, concentrated, whatever, effort to connect with deity a lot of the time. And we have kind of a formal methodology for going about that. Not like you have to do it. Every night before I go to bed, I pour a glass of water. Thanks to, I think it's the Spiritual Cleansing Book by Draha. Yes, the last name's absolutely impronounceable as far as I'm concerned. Lovely, fabulous book. And he talks about I think it was just the power of blessing a glass of water each night beside your bed and then releasing all of the accumulated whatever that got trapped in the water in the morning by just flushing it away. What I've ended up doing with that is each night I fill this glass with water, and instead of just my own blessing into it, I use it as a connection point between me and my deity. So it's a moment for me to pray outwards and to reach upwards and to connect with them, and I feel that connection come down, and through that water creates a link, a conduit for us to be connected each night. So, and that's the reason I mention it, is because that case, I'm reaching outwards to deity. I'm reaching out to connect with the divine. And so the experience of the divine doesn't just have to be what they bring to you. It can also be you reaching out to them, which is something I consider really important, actually, that we have to remember to reach upwards and into their world, as well as feeling them reaching downwards and into ours. Okay, and I think this is my final one, and it's from Corey over at New World Witchery. Oh, and Araya, by the way, is Araya the Sphinx from Media Astra Octera, just in case you didn't happen to already know that somehow in some universe that is vaguely connected to this one. So Corey over at New World Witchery says, I thought I'd also take a stab at the experiencing the divine portion of your show. I've had a couple of pretty potent experiences with different elements of the divine. I tend to think of the world from a fairly animistic point of view, so my experiences are individual and I don't necessarily think of all of them as connecting to the same thing. When I first came to paganism, I had been searching for a long time and had been looking through religious texts and meditating on them for years. I read through the Bible twice completely, then did a parables version of reading through, and then read it again while meditating on the specific selection from that day. I'm a bit of a nerd. Nerd? Oh my god, you read the Bible how many times? I want the time that you have in your life. Where do you find time to read the Bible multiple times, not to mention the patience? Wow, I'm seriously impressed. A little blown away, seriously impressed. Anyhow, coming back to his email. When I finally stopped identifying as Christian, I sat meditating one night and just said, okay, whoever's out there, I'm here. And immediately I got a mental image of a woman and a man saying, we're here, good to see you, or something to that effect. I think I've told the story on the podcast before. That would be his podcast, New World Witcher. It was powerful enough to start me looking seriously at polytheism and animism and paganism, and launched me on this particular spiritual journey. That was experience number one. Then about 5 or 6 years ago, I did a Yule observance outdoors and decided that I wanted to get the story of the season. So I blindfolded myself and stood before a big fire. Not smart. Not recommending. Just explaining what I did. Then invoked an archetype, the blind poet. As I pounded the ground with a staff, I suddenly felt like I had sunk into myself and someone else was in me at the front. I began speaking a rhythmic poem telling a seasonal story and didn't stop speaking or even pause until the story was done. It was amazing. I've only had a limited number of ritual possession experiences, and that was my first, but it firmly established that as a way of contacting the divine. I've since had other divine experiences, like seeing the crossroads spirit, which I talked about in the spell failures episode, and using tradcraft techniques to contact ancestors. But I thought those two examples might be worth sharing. They are absolutely worth sharing, and thank you so much, Corey, for that, because it adds then yet another layer, which I love. I love that you gave me so many layers to work with. You guys are fabulous. So going a step farther than just reaching out and contacting ourselves to the divine, what he's talking about is that connection where they come to us of truly embodying them and doing divine channeling, which is about as close to experiencing the divine directly as I think I've ever had. Which isn't to say that experiencing the divine as in nature is in any way or shape or form less than having the channeled experience, just that they are very different. And I'm really glad that that got included as well. Channeling deity is a fascinating experience, but one to be approached typically with a wee bit of caution. Just going to say, channeling is more than just going, hey, can you kind of come here and do this? You want to be safe with it. And if you are going to run out and start channeling deities, I highly recommend that you channel ones that you already work with and therefore have a vested interest in making sure that you kind of come out of the experience relatively sane and relatively okay. That's my cautionary point for that one. So thank you to everyone who sent in their commentary. That it's just fabulous and fascinating. And like I said, they're all right. And I think that there's, as you can see, there was a lot of commonality to how people experience the divine, as well as a wide range of where and how we experience the divine. I find it interesting that for the most part, when it comes to experiencing the divine in the world around us, that we see the divine either in nature or within what I would call the home life, things that are important to us personally. Not a lot of mention of, you know, looking at a skyscraper and seeing the divine. Maybe it's seeing the divine in human. I took a trip to New York last year, and there are certain things that are absolutely stunning, but I tend to see the divinity of humanity in those moments rather than true divinity. Maybe because it is so obvious that our hands have touched it. And maybe I have a problem in releasing the human part to see the divine that lies within it. Not sure. For me personally, and how I experience the divine, well, I didn't write it down, an answer, beforehand, so to think of it now after having read all the other ones is a little difficult, because I agree with all of it. I very much see the divine in nature. I tend to see the divine more clearly in nature when it's the weather or more wild, less touched environments, but it is not restricted to that. There is divinity within my home. I certainly experience divinity when doing ritual, but not limited to that in the slightest. I've had the experience of deity when I'm walking down the hallway at work and feeling like I'm getting kind of a nudge or a page, almost, if you will. The days of pagers. They're gone now. Now we have texting. Interesting. Anyhow, so I've channeled deity. I've gone the whole gambit, and all I can say is that every moment and every time that it happens, I feel blessed, and I welcome new moments, and that a lot of it comes down to being open and paying attention to all of it. To any one of those experiences, you have to be open, you have to be kind of willing to see divinity, and you're an invitation to see them, an invitation to experience them, a reaching out, which is kind of the advantage of saying an invitation. An invitation is something you have to send outwards, so that there is this reciprocity, if you will, between us and our deities, where there is always the divine in the world around us. And all we have to do is to open our eyes and see it. What is it? Believing is seeing? I know the traditional one is seeing is believing, but there was some made-for-TV crazy movie that believing is seeing, and I really like that phrase. So there is this, it is there always ready and waiting to be seen, but there is, that is one part of it, and then there is the part where you invite them to you, or they come to you. And both of those are equally profound and important, and that is where I'm going to leave the discussion. So, for the sake of my voice, I'm going to take a teeny little break and play a few promos and see what the Sesame Street Land has to say about episode 16. And when we come back, I promise the very first thing we do is do the draw. So I will be back right after the break.
Hi, this is Kathleen, the hostess of Borealis Meditation, Geology for Pagans. Geology is the study of the Earth, so what better subject for pagans? Join me to learn about minerals, rocks, and other interesting facts and theories about the Earth. I can be found at Podbean, on iTunes, and Podcast Alley. Or just come on over to the blog at borealismeditation.blogspot.com.
Episode 16 of Pennies in the Well is brought to you by, let's see, you're standing out, the Three of Swords and the Runestone Awar. Plus, we have a bonus today. They'd like to throw itself on the floor, and the bonus is need.
This is Mojo.
And this is Sparrow.
From the Wigglian Way. The Wigglian Way is a pagan podcast that explores the many facets of living a magical lifestyle.
We are two Wiccans practicing witchcraft in beautiful British Columbia, Canada.
Join with us and explore your path on the Wigglian Way.
You can download us at thewigglianway.libsyn.com.
You can also find us using iTunes. We're at Podcast Pickle and on Podcast Alley.
Thanks for walking
the Wigglian Way.
All right, are you all ready to find out who it is who's won the Tricky Pixie CD signed by S.J. Tucker and Betsy Tini? Little drum roll. Okay, that was enough for that silliness. Now let's have a flip through. Let's circle these around. Let's mix them all up because I wouldn't want to have any accidental favoritism. Not that I would ever have favoritism. No. All right, we have a number. We have a winner. And it is, who's it going to be? Polly. Hey, congratulations, Polly. So you need to send me your snail mail address, which I do believe is in New Zealand, which is just so cool. Oh my God. So send me your snail mail address and I will be shipping you off your very own Tricky Pixie CD that is signed. So congratulations. Sorry to everybody else. That was fun. Thank you. So we're going to get into the final little segment for today and right after this little intro.
Time for a little magical housekeeping.
Yes, our final talk for the day is going to be on magical housekeeping, specifically about purging. As I mentioned very beginning of this episode, I had to get rid of, well, I had to clean out a room about 15 foot square, even with a slope ceiling. If you've ever been a pack ratty type, you must understand the amount of stuff that you can fit within that kind of space. I had a full wide filing cabinet, some furniture, all my Halloween stuff, all of my Christmas stuff, all of my camping stuff, one hell of a lot of crafting stuff, plus stuff where you're just like, seriously, I'm keeping that? Though for the most part, I actually understand why. I come, it should be understood, from a family of pack rats. We are known for our ability to keep stuff. It's a little spooky. And you never know when something that you get rid of is actually going to come in useful later. In fact, I have invariably found that when I've held on to something for a long time and then I get rid of it, within about 6 to 8 months later, I suddenly discover my need for that thing, of how I could have so used it for X if only I still had it. And I'm sure that in 6 to 8 months I will discover all kinds of things that, you know, if I'd still had X, I could, you know, do something. But the fact is, when we keep that much stuff, we clutter up everything. We clutter up our space, we clutter up our minds, we clutter up our being. Purging was pretty much the hardest thing that I've had to do in a home sense because it is not in my nature. And such a valuable experience, despite the agony and the pain. And why was it such a valuable experience? Well, let me tell you why I had such a good experience with it. Well, again, I'm not sure about good. It is in its own way an exceedingly cleansing experience. There's a lot of stuff that we hold on to, for memory's sake. And there are things that I have kept from my childhood, largely, if it's a picture, I've kept it, but a few, very, very few now, odds and ends. And it seemed like every time I had to get rid of stuff, I would pare away what it was that I was keeping from when I was younger or from a different time period of my life. And this round just got kind of brutal where, you know, any time period of life got one representation left. I kept one thing and preferably small. Why is that important? Well, we want to keep things that are related to our past. It's important to not forget where we come from and how we got to where we are, if no other reason than to avoid making any mistakes that we've previously made. But there's no need to keep that much of it. And I think we like to hold on too strongly to our past sometimes, and that way clogging up our future. It also, if you want to get into the feng shui of it, not that I know anything about feng shui. I don't. I know zip. I know zilch. Zero. Nix. Niente. Nada. There's a lot of ways to say nothing. And I know a fair number of them. And yeah, so I don't know anything about feng shui. But if you just deal with the energy of a room and you fill it full of stuff, and versus the energy of a room that is empty or near empty, they are very different feeling. And while a too empty room can feel cold and unwelcoming, a too full room can become claustrophobic and unwelcoming in its own way. So in our rooms, as within our lives, we need to strike a balance between having enough room to live and having the stuff that makes us feel happy and comfortable around us. I think for a lot of us, we keep a lot more stuff around than we need to. And it's really easy, you know, throwing stuff out takes time, it takes energy, it takes a lot of decision making, and it takes letting go. And letting go can be really, really hard. It's also a fabulous lesson. Oh my God, is it fabulous to truly let go of things from our past where you're not forgetting, you're not going, ah, I deny you, I'm never going to acknowledge your existence, but rather to go, I'm done. I really don't need to have this around anymore. It doesn't serve any purpose. I'm going to let it go. To let something go can be an absolutely fantastic healing experience. And some of this came down to very simple things. Like I used to do a lot of mosaic tile work, which is really, really fun because you get to smash things and break things and then you make things from it. So it's got that wonderful dual aspect that I really enjoy. But the fact is that I haven't done mosaic tiling in probably about 4 years because I simply have no time. And I look at my life now and go, I'm an aspiring author, a podcaster, a coven mate, and a girlfriend, and a coworker, and there's a lot of things that take up a lot of time in my life. And am I really, if I have that spare time, am I going to mosaic tile? The answer is probably not. That time in my life has passed, and who knows, when I retire and I have more time in my life, maybe it'll take it up again. But in the meantime, all it does is collect dust and take up space in my no longer storage room, and where on earth would I put it into my house now? So off it went. Bye-bye. And the same can be said for a lot of things. So while I'm not saying strip your home down to nothing, and I will very much say that each person is going to find their own equilibrium of how much stuff they like to have around them and what actually works for them, I do recommend that if you've got a lot of stuff in cupboards and closets and kind of overflowing into your living area, it's time to perhaps have a look at it and start letting things go. And I know how hard and painful that can be. But I promise you that if you're honest with yourself, you keep the stuff that you really love and you let go of the rest, you will feel better for it. Aside from that item that 6 to 8 months from now, you will discover that shit, that really would have been useful if you had kept it. Yes, that will happen. And that is part of the acceptance of letting things go, that yes, you are potentially inconveniencing your future self. But the fact is, most of the stuff we can come by in another way. If it's that rare, that unusual, that special, why on earth were you getting rid of it in the first place? And if it wasn't any of those things, then I'm betting you can go and find a replacement. So that is my magical housekeeping segment for today, of just advocating the very difficult and very painful and very useful experience of purging crap from the house. Because it was good. So that's going to wrap up episode 16 of Pennies in the Well. I hope you have enjoyed this rather unique episode. I know that I really enjoyed bringing it to you and being able to share with you what everyone else had experienced. So thank you for downloading the show. Thank you for listening all the way to the end. I feel like I should have like a little star or something, like a little smiley face that I give out to the people who make it to the very end. But alas, I don't. So instead, here's a little of the Tricky Pixie album itself, the Mushroom Song, to take you out on. And to all of you, blessings of the deep and wild. Blessed be.
Sleep of the earth, of the land of fairy, deep is the lore of Hail be to they of the forest gentry, veiled of spirits, help us free. White is the dust of the state of dreaming, light is the mixture.
powder to make one still. Dark is the powder of death's redeeming mark, but that one pinch can kill. Sleep of the earth, of the land of the redeemed, is the lure of Kutunashir. Hail me today of the forest gentry, pale dark spirits, pale dark spirits. White is the dust of the state of dreaming, light is the mixture to make one stitch, dark is the powder.